We have got a bunch of great events on the near horizon I want to tell you about before we dive into today's episode. And for all these events, the biggest reason to come is because everyone that attends has been pre-vetted to make sure they're a meaningful 7 or 8 figure business owner or someone that can add a ton of value to an event. So when you sit down with almost anyone at these events, you'll be able to talk for hours about the kind of stuff that's running around in your brain all day long as a business owner. So that's the biggest reason to come to these. But that being said, here's all the details on what's coming up. ECF Charlotte is happening September 21st and 22nd. Nick Sharma is going to be speaking. We're going to be touring a FedEx major shipping and sorting hub, which if that isn't a true litmus test of if you're a real e-commerce geek, I don't know what is. We'll be having great meals, food, touring some local ECF member businesses, doing some whitewater rafting for people sticking around after the event at the U.S. National Whitewater Center. It's going to be a really good time. So if you're in ECF as a member, you can, of course, find the link to that and register immediately. If you're not, and you've thought about, hey, you've heard about this community, you've been listening to the podcast for a while, and you've always wanted to check it out, but you've just never been sure, we have a few guest passes for non-members. As long as you have a qualifying 7 or 8 figure business, you can apply and go ahead and get a guest pass to check things out. And so all the details, ecommercefuel.com/Charlotte for guest passes, or if you want to just check out the full agenda and all the details. Secondly, Ecom Camp is our event for 8-figure store owners, and that is coming up November 1st through the 4th. We did this last year, had an amazing, you know, probably 30, 35 members come, you know, for 3 days of a really great time, probably average size of just shy of $30 million. This is exclusively for our e-commerce fuel members. So if you're an ECF member doing 8 figures in sales, this is your PSA to grab those tickets. They're already about 2/3 gone, and I think they're going to last a whole lot longer. So you should be able to grab those in the community. It should be pretty obvious where to do that. If not, if you can't find that, just DM Audrey or myself, and we'll send you the link. And then finally, ECF Austin is happening January 11th and 12th. So we had to push that back for a couple of logistical reasons. Thanks for your patience, ECF Austin members. But put that, you save the date for 11th and 12th so you don't have anything else planned. Would love to see you. And then finally, the Big Kahuna ECF Live is happening March 5th through the 9th in San Diego, California. Excited to bring our main kind of staple event back to the West Coast. San Diego is such a phenomenal city. You know, fly right into downtown. You're right on the water. If I was going to live in any major California city, it would definitely be San Diego. I just love the vibe there. So yeah, we're going to have a great time. So again, save the date, March 5th through the 9th, and tickets will be going on sale this fall. Huge thanks to Audrey for setting this all up, our director of events. Audrey, thank you, and hope to see you at an event soon. The E-commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One Click Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of One Click Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7 and 8 figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, flying solo and doing something that one of my favorite things to do is to go over the results of our e-commerce trends report. This is a report, I guess the fourth time doing this survey, hundreds and hundreds, I think it was over 600 store owners this year, to see what's working in e-commerce, what's not, what trends are emerging. Just really get a lay of the land in terms of marketing and Amazon and margins and all sorts of stuff. So that report is now live, and yeah, excited to share the key takeaways from it. So I talked about some of these, the key takeaways at ECF Live in my keynote there. So some of those will be familiar, but there's also some new ones when we really got into the crunching the numbers for it that emerged as well. So give it a listen if you were there. 4 surprising takeaways I'm going to talk about in today's episode related to the best business model and competitive advantage, pricing tactic that almost always works for store owners, why ROAS is probably less important than you think, and something we saw for the first time ever with Amazon. So getting into all of those and more. So I'm going to jump right into it. So background on this, like I said, this is a survey of over 600 store owners. And thank you to everyone who participated. This is not a trivial survey. I mean, you have, there's like, I think 50-ish questions that get answered. So if you answered this and dove into this, a huge thank you. Appreciate it for the time. I couldn't do this without your support. So 600 store owners, the average size of the store was about $7 million in revenue. That was skewed a little bit higher with some massive, just huge 500-pound gorillas in the survey, maybe median size more in the $2 million range. But yeah, meaningful size businesses. The data was looking at kind of the last 12 months when we collected it in March of this year. It took a couple of months to crunch this data, so thanks for your patience. And started this report back in 2017. And man, kind of, you know, I got to just own it. 2000 kind of fell through the cracks, to be honest, in 2020 and 21 with COVID, with other things, mostly just because life got in the way and I didn't get it done. So got to kind of own that, but excited to be bringing it back and kind of looking at it this year again. So it's been a few years since we had data points, but lots happened since then. And as you'll see in some of the data here. So primarily US-based, probably about, you know, I'd say 70% of the respondents were in the US, about 5% in Europe, 5% in Australia, 8% in Canada, and 12% throughout the rest of the year, the world. A pretty, like, you know, and a large chunk, you know, so $4.4 billion of aggregate revenue represented. And the average store owner is about 41 years old in terms of their age. The first time ever I looked at the competitive advantage in terms of what people thought their biggest selling prop was, I thought this was interesting. And the biggest one by far was selling a proprietary product at about 26%. Industry knowledge and like expertise was second at about 21%. And incredible customer service was listed third at about 17%. And we also looked at people, this actually surprised me, only about 13% of people said they were amazing marketers. Like that's what was their competitive advantage, is they knew Facebook ads or SEO really well. I thought that'd be higher. It was kind of surprisingly low. Business models was another interesting one. And probably even more surprising than business models was the shift we've seen over the years in business models of stores. So I'm not going to read them all here, but the biggest shifts happened, and these shifts happened between 2017 and 2022, so a 5-year gap here. But in that time, drop shipping, you know, went from 18% to about 9%, so about cut in half. Reselling other people's products went from about 23% to about 11%, so more than cut in half. Manufacturing more than doubled from 22% to over 40%. So a pretty, maybe not a shocker, but pretty, some pretty meaningful changes in terms of the types of businesses people are running. So one of the first things I asked people was, I wanted to analyze and get a sense for the difficulty of 2021 and kind of coming into 2022, because it's been a rough couple of years after COVID. I think for reasons people, most people listening to this are going to understand. And I asked people, Patrick Cadu, apologies if you're listening, I don't know if you're listening to this or not, but I know he mentioned that one of the first questions I asked was 2021 your hardest year in business? And he said that kind of hit him like just a punch in the gut. And I'm sure it did other people. And I wasn't trying to be, wasn't trying to be abusive. I really genuinely wanted to get a sense, like, how did this compare? I was actually surprised. Only about a third of people said it was their hardest year in business, with, you know, the rest of people saying, predominantly most people, two-thirds saying no, it wasn't. And so rough year, but surprisingly, I thought it was gonna be more like 50-60%, just given some of the headwinds that we had. The biggest challenge that you're gonna know all of them, supply chain, scaling and growth, you know, the rising ad costs, all this stuff. But the biggest challenge people cited was hiring and finding talent out of everything that happened. So finding good people is the hardest thing people are struggling with right now. Looking at some of the supply chain challenges, 70% of people over the trailing 12 months when I took this, you know, ran out of key items, which represented over $1 billion in aggregate sales lost due to outages. This has changed, of course, but average container prices over that period were about $16,000 for a 40-foot. I think that's coming down as of more recently, with, you know, 5 to 6 weeks of average container delays versus pre-COVID. So kind of some supply chain craziness. Sales tax was interesting. That's just getting more and more complicated. Thankfully, we had some, it seems like there's a little bit of progress on that. ECF member Michelle Hugh from Vim and Vigor recently testified in front of the Senate, I think it was a Senate Finance Committee, in terms of advocating for sales tax reform, which is pretty exciting. They're actually starting to think about that and listen to that. But it's still a big issue. I mean, if you look at all of this data is in the report, which I'll link up to in the show notes, and which you can find at ecommercefuel.com/ecommerce-trends. You can find the whole thing there. But I mean, if you're a If you're doing $5 to $10 million in sales, you're spending almost $10,000 per year in compliance costs, just, you know, just out-of-pocket compliant costs, and filing in 16 states, which is pretty insane for a business of that size. So challenging year, only the hardest for about a third of them. But yeah, 2021 was, and you know, the first part of 22 has been rough for a lot of folks. Pricing, one thing I looked at this year in depth was some pricing trends, because supplier prices were going up, merchants were raising prices, there was inflation, a lot was going on there. And one of the biggest takeaways from the whole report, I think, was when you look at raising prices, the data clearly says it is almost universally a good move to raise your prices. And why do I think that? Well, I asked people, what happened to your revenues when you raised your prices? Because raising prices is a terrifying thing. I think we all think that we're going to raise prices, everyone's going to freak out, abandon our business, and it's just going to crumble into a, you know, into a pile of flames and ashes as our customers revolt. And that just was not the case. About almost two-thirds of people said there was no change in their revenues when their prices went up, which means that they're selling about the same. So the, you know, maybe they're having fewer orders, but the increase in, you know, in revenue offsets the fewer orders. So no change for two-thirds of people. For a quarter of people, revenues actually increased, and the, you know, only for about 14% of people, revenues decreased. So in 86% of the cases, there was a positive outcome from raising prices. Either you had the same revenue with higher margins, which is good, or you had a higher revenue with rich margins. So biggest thing for me in this is raise your prices. If you have not raised your prices, raise your prices. And worst case happens, revenue goes down a little bit. It may even still be a plus if you're, you know, if your profitability is the same. And if for some reason you decide it's not a good move or people freak out, you can revert. So raise prices. The one thing I did think was interesting was suppliers on average raised prices on store owners about 15%, whereas merchants, so us people, you know, you listening to this as a store owner, only raised prices on average about 11%. So in general, stores are not raising prices as much as their supply chain prices are increasing, which is too bad, because that's going to hurt margins, as we'll see here a little bit further down the line. So one of the most interesting kind of analyses we did was looking at what powered the most, you know, the best performing companies. And we looked at this on a couple of metrics. One, in terms of who was growing the fastest. And secondly, in terms of who's growing the fastest, but also profitably. Because, you know, personally, I'd rather have there's a big difference there. Some people can grow really quickly and go out of business, but that's, I think profits are kind of important. I think the market's kind of starting to agree with that too. And so if you look at just the fast growers, we're going to call that the rabbit group first. This is companies that are in the top 20th percentile in terms of sales, have a minimum of $1 million in sales to try to control for noise on fast growing, very small companies. The thing that the fast growers did relative to the control group, which was the bottom 20th percentile and a minimum of $1 million in sales, the biggest thing that stood out from them was, of all the metrics we looked at, was their competitive advantage. And if somebody listed branding and storytelling as their competitive advantage, they were more than six times more likely to be in that fast growing group. And branding and competitive advantage wasn't even one of the top competitive advantages, wasn't even the top three, but people in that, you know, 10 to 15% cohort were more than six times more likely to be in that fast growing group, which I thought was shocking. Other things that the fast-growing companies over-indexed on, they were 77% more likely to manufacture their own product. Their conversion rate was about 20% higher. They were significantly about 50% less likely to list industry knowledge as a competitive advantage. I think this is an interesting one. It seems like, and we'll kind of talk about this later on in the podcast, that industry knowledge is becoming harder and harder to use effectively as a differentiator, just given how much, for whatever reason, it's becoming less of an effective differentiator in terms of being able to build a successful, meaningful business, or at least as relative to the other ones in the study. One thing that there was no difference in that surprised me was return on ad spend. It was almost identical, which I think maybe you could say, you know, hey, fast growing companies are willing to take a lower ad spend in terms of scale, you know, in exchange for growing more quickly, right? Like you can't maintain a super high ad spend and still grow, you know, pour tons of money into your growth. But at the same time, I would have thought that they would have had at least a little bit of a better ad spend. I mean, these aren't venture-backed companies for the most part reporting. These are bootstrapped or, you know, owner-founded companies that don't have millions in outside capital. And I thought that was really surprising. So those were kind of the takeaways from, and again, this is correlation, right? It's not causation. So you can't prove that these things are driving these, but I think they're pretty telling. And I think there's, you know, if I had to, I'm a betting man. I think there's a decent amount of inference that we can draw there in terms of what's working, what's not. The second group, so I call these the profitable rabbits, were companies that had at least $2.5 million in revenue, that had at least 20% net margins, and that were growing their income at least 15% year over year. Compared to the, there's a comparison group of $2.5 million in revenue and that were in the bottom 25th percentile in terms of net margin. So again, this is the companies that are growing, but they're growing profitably. And what were the big takeaways there? Well, let's start with ROAS. ROAS was almost identical. In fact, actually the profitable rabbit group was had a slightly lower ROAS, about 4 or 5% lower than the comparison group. Headcount, the profitable companies that were growing, they had half as many employees as companies, similar size companies that weren't very profitable, you know, so they were able to do the same amount with half the number of in-house team. They also, again, not surprisingly, were very branding and storytelling focused. They were more than twice as likely to list that as their competitive advantage. This was interesting. They were 25% less likely to run their own warehouse, which, I mean, kind of makes sense, right? There's a lot of overhead involved with running your own warehouse. And they were also about 25% less reliant on traffic from paid sources, which I think is interesting. So what are the big takeaways from this? I think the biggest one is your overhead a lot of times has more of an impact on your profitability than your ROAS. So one of the big things I talked about at ECF Live is your team size killing your profitability? And when you're obsessing about ROAS, should you really be thinking about, you know, all the overhead that you have? Because all that goes straight to your bottom line. So if you're a store that has $1 to $2.5 million in revenues, the median number of employees is 3. If you're 5 to 10 million, your median number of employees is 12. If you're 25 to 50 million, median number of employees is 55. So where do you index on those numbers? And all the this full chart for all the different revenue sizes will be in the report. But it's worth looking at there because that has a almost certainly way more dramatic impact on your profitability than your ROAS. So that's a big one. The other one was just the importance of branding. I mean, we always hear about this, right? But seeing it played out in the numbers and the results so starkly is pretty telling in terms of being, you know, in terms of growth and growth and profitability. You're anywhere from 2 or 6 times more likely to do well on the growth and the profitability side if you really are good at branding and storytelling, which still only about 10 to 15% of us are saying that's our core advantage. All right, let's dive into some paid traffic stats. So at a high level, this isn't going to shock anyone, paid traffic became significantly less effective over the last 12 months or so. So putting numbers to this, paid traffic in general decreased by about 20% in terms of its effectiveness over the last 12 months. Facebook took about a 30% hit in terms of its effectiveness on average, which is in line with other kind of things I've seen in other data sources as well. But kind of probably even more scary is if you look at collectively the group's reliance on paid traffic from 2 or 3 years ago versus today, we're about 56% more reliant collectively on paid traffic for our, you know, eyeballs than we were even just 3 years ago. So kind of a brutal, you know, just getting hit from both sides, more reliant on a less effective source of traffic. And I think a lot of us are feeling that and starting to really look hard at alternates going forward. One thing I measure is the median return on ad spend for people's best performing platform. So these aren't averages across everybody, but for people who said, I asked people, what platform did you see the best return on ad spend on? And then what was your ROAS for that? Google and Amazon were about 4x for people who did really well on those on average. So so very feasible, very possible to get, you know, some and that's a pretty decent return on ad spend, especially for 2022 for people who have those platforms dialed in. So among people who said that Facebook was their best performing platform, the median return on ad spend for that was only 2.5x, which is, man, that's pretty abysmal when that's what people are saying is their best platform for return on ad spend. So just kind of interesting the difference in the delta between Google and Amazon and Facebook even in 2022. Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log onto our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active forum with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana, or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members. You know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and just, and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member-only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion. Another thing I like to look at and ask about is, what are the most widely used marketing channels and what are the most effective marketing channels, and have compared this year over year. And if you look at the top 5 channels that are most widely used this year, first one, number one was, you want to take any guesses in your mind? I'll give you a second. Number one was email marketing. Number two was Google AdWords. Number three was SEO. Number four was Facebook ads. And number five was Instagram. It's interesting. AdWords got bumped up a spot from a couple of years ago. SEO bumped up a spot. Facebook ads fell 2 positions in terms of popularity for reasons that are pretty obvious. And Instagram stayed about the same. Also like to look at not just what's most popular, but what's most effective. And we measure this by looking at, for people that, you know, so when we ask people, hey, what marketing channels and techniques are you using? They'll list, you know, I don't know, 2, 3, 5, 7 different types. But then we ask, what are the 2 most effective that you're using out of all of those? And so we look at the percentage of, you know, what's most, you know, which ones get mentioned the most in that effective group relative to the number of people using them. And number one, 2 or 3 years ago, and number one in 2022 remains Amazon ads. So if you're on Amazon, you sell on Amazon, it's probably one of the best places you can be putting your ad dollars if you're dialing those in effectively. The most effective marketing channel for, you know, 2, 3 years running here. Google AdWords bumped up a spot to the 2nd most effective. And that's kind of in line anecdotally with what I've been hearing from a lot of merchants too, that especially if Facebook has tanked, they're allocating money more towards AdWords. And it also kind of plays out as well in some of the ROAS numbers we're seeing. Email marketing went down a spot to number 3 in terms of effectiveness. SEO dropped a spot to number 4. And Facebook ads is at number 5, kind of staying steady from a couple of years ago. In terms of channels that had the most potential going forward, this is, you know, we just asked people what they saw the most opportunity in. Number 1 is probably not going to surprise people, TikTok. A lot of buzz and talk about that. Number 2, influencer marketing. Number 3, SMS. And number 4, YouTube and short video, YouTube in particular. So that's where people are really seeing the most opportunity in terms of you know, eyeballs and results and return on investment going forward. So given the increased reliance on paid traffic, the decreasing effectiveness of it, I think a lot of people are starting to try to figure out, okay, how can we build traffic that is less, you know, we have to pay for less of it, become less reliant there. And so dove into some trends on repeat customers, subscriptions, wholesale, things like that, because I think that's only going to get more important going forward. So about a 27% of orders across the survey come from repeat customers, which I thought was pretty high, actually. I don't know if people are misrepresenting this, or maybe not intentionally, but maybe overestimating how much of their orders come from repeat sales. But that seemed pretty high to me, given kind of a lot of numbers I've seen, a lot of potential companies I've looked at on the ECF Capital side. Because that's one of our criteria is ideally companies that have a high repeat purchase rate, just for this reason that, you know, it's cheaper to have a customer come back to you, of course, than have to try to acquire a new one. So that seemed high to me. Subscriptions, about 18% of all the stores offered subscriptions. And subscriptions, I think, is something that sounds really good on paper. Like, oh, hey, just offer subscriptions. And then you want to pay for customers all the time. But a couple of things. One, like, you have to have the right product for that, right? If you're selling chainsaws, I mean, maybe you are. Yeah. Are your chainsaw customers really going to be super interested in a subscription for that? A chain of the month club? Yeah, maybe. Probably not. I mean, maybe it works. But I think the other thing too is I think people are also getting potentially subscription fatigue to some degree. So it can work really well, but I don't think it's as much of a fix-all for everyone's niche as some people make it out to be. But about 18% of stores do offer subscriptions. This is interesting though. Of the stores that are actually offering subscriptions, subscriptions drive about 30% of their revenue, which is pretty meaningful. So about a third of the revenue comes from subscription revenue. And I looked at stores that offer subscriptions versus ones that don't. And the ones that do offer subscriptions are 15% more profitable and growing at about 26% a faster clip than stores that aren't. So it helps on the growth and the profitability side, which is interesting. So if it works out, it can work out well. Let's talk wholesale in terms of a low-cost channel to go through. It sometimes can sound really appealing. Big customers, large orders, repeat business. Of course, but you're also on the flip side taking a pretty big margin hit, right? And sometimes you've got terms you have to offer depending on if you're going direct versus some of these places like Fair. So I was curious, like, is this actually, what do people think about this in aggregate? So about half of people offer wholesale, have wholesale clients and sell wholesale. A third of those people that do, so of the population that is actually selling wholesale, a third say it's great. They love it. It's worked out really well for them, a little over a third. More than half say, "Yeah, it's okay," and about 10% of people absolutely hate it. So, again, mixed bag on that front. Again, I think margin is a huge component here, and how well people can resell it. Again, it comes down to a fit side. So it can work, but there's definitely more than half of people. It's just it's just about medium on. Let's talk about Amazon. So back the last time I did this report, made a prediction, and that was that we had hit peak Amazon. And so I track a couple of things, track the number of merchants selling on Amazon and also the aggregate sales on Amazon. And for the first 3 years I did this, sales on Amazon were increasing kind of fairly quickly, and then kind of starting that growth trend was starting to taper off, still growing, but much more gradually. And yeah, I made the prediction. I thought we were going to actually start declining in terms of people selling on Amazon. That's what we saw this year. Not by a ton, but by a little bit. So the number of merchants actually selling on Amazon last time I did the report was 56%, and it dropped to 53%. And when you look at it on an aggregate sale basis as well, to kind of control for, maybe there's a lot more people doing big revenue on Amazon, the aggregate sales controlled for merchant size also dropped. So about 28% of sales came from Amazon. The last time we did the survey, dropped down to about 26% this time. So kind of interesting, when I look at thoughts on the Amazon front, the vast majority in terms of sentiment, obviously Amazon's not going anywhere. And the vast majority of people selling on Amazon admit it is getting harder, but just say, hey, you know what? We're just sticking with it. We're not planning on going anywhere. There's a handful of people, a minority, that are saying that we're going to quit and bow out. But the most people on the platform, they're not going to leave. They're just kind of coming to terms with the fact it's a harder marketplace. What I thought was interesting was I compared merchants that didn't sell at all on Amazon to merchants that did sell on Amazon. And you've got some real advantages if you're not selling on Amazon, because the non-Amazon sellers beat the Amazon contingent on almost every category. Revenue growth was significantly higher if you didn't sell on Amazon. Income growth was significantly higher. Gross margin was pretty much a tie. I think Amazon maybe had a tiny, tiny advantage, but for all practical purposes was a tie. And net margins was a reasonable advantage for the non-Amazon sellers. So kind of interesting. It'll be interesting to see if this trend continues on next year when we do the report. Some high-level financial metrics as we start to wrap this up. If your brain is exploding from all these statistics I'm throwing at you, we're on the home stretch here. So stick with me. Top line revenue growth for a long time, you know, it was right around 35%. We saw about a bump up to 40% for COVID. Actually, was kind of surprised that wasn't a larger bump. I think maybe that was dampered by some of the stores that really had a rough go of things. Obviously COVID was pretty positive for e-commerce in general, but some stores really struggled niche dependent. But then after COVID, it's kind of settled back down again to right around that 35% growth range, which is interesting. But income, interesting, net margins took kind of a noticeable hit this year, down from 18% last time to 16% this time. And I think, you know, why is that? Well, I think it's, some of them are probably pretty obvious. In paid traffic's getting more expensive, of course. There's margin compression from pricing. If you remember before, we talked about the average supplier increased their prices more than the average store increased their prices. And so even though store owners are increasing their prices, they're not increasing them enough to make up for the supplier increases for whatever reason. So that's having impact on margins. And you know, margins came down a couple percentage points, which at 18% is pretty meaningful. And then conversion rates were way down. Last time we looked at this, it was 3% and they dropped to about 2.5%. And I don't know if that was a post-COVID slump. You know, taking a lot of this data was in the spring of 2022, and we were kind of coming off of people had binged on e-commerce for a while. We're going out, world was opening back up. If you're listening to this, I'm sure you're aware of that trend, and maybe that had part of the reason why people weren't buying as much. But we'll be interested to see if that pops back up next year. But conversion rates were down meaningfully, and I looked at on all these different metrics. Revenue growth, income growth, margins, conversion rates, all these different things. There's a chart, and I'm not going to do all the stats here because it would, again, make my head explode, and I'm looking at it in terms of different business models, manufacturing, reselling, these kind of things, and different competitive advantages, branding, you know, industry, maybe having industry expertise, proprietary product, things like that. And I wanted to see what was the best combination of both type of product you sold, you know, versus your competitive advantage. And so go to the report and you can see a kind of a matrix of all these different things. So which one wins? And manufacturing as a type of business in terms of how you get your product and branding / storytelling, those two absolutely smoked all of the other types of business models and competitive advantages. It wasn't even close. I think those two categories took 9 out of the 10 top spots in terms of who had the highest net margin and growth and profitability and conversion rates. It was pretty crazy. So if you're starting to, if you're thinking about how to pivot right now or thinking about starting a new e-commerce business, those would be kind of the compass headings I would follow. And the data, data really, really tells that out pretty starkly. So just went through a ton of stuff. What are the big takeaways here now that I've fried your brain? Apart from you math PhDs and statistics PhDs, the top 4 takeaways I took from this study, number 1, just mentioned it, manufacturers and storytelling and / branding focused companies are smoking everybody on a competitive relative basis. Higher margins, they have more repeat customers, they're growing faster, they're doing so much better than the competition. So those are the two kind of things to focus on in terms of it's from a data-driven standpoint if you want to do well. Secondly, raise your prices. It's almost certainly going to be a good move. I mentioned this before, but you have an 85% chance of having a positive outcome if you raise your prices relative to what has happened from other folks. And if you don't, has there been cataclysmic events for businesses when you raise your prices? Of course, yes. But I would say in most instances, if it does go poorly, you can revert without a whole lot of damage. And the upside is just so tremendous. So number 2, raise your prices. And you're probably not raising your prices enough because on aggregate, people are not raising, us as merchants are not raising our prices as much as the suppliers have raised them on us. And that is hitting our margin. So make sure you're raising them at least as much. Offset the increase in your cost of goods sold. Number 3, and I probably should put this at the very top, you're probably over-obsessing about your return on ad spend. Taylor Holiday from Common Thread Collective had a great tweet that I wish I would have come up with. Something along the lines of, you don't have a ROAS problem, you have a margin problem. But you can fill in the blank there. You don't have a ROAS problem, you have an overhead problem. You have a too many people on your team problem. You have a traffic strategy that depends entirely on paid traffic problem. Whatever that is. Again, ROAS was not a key determining factor in terms of how quickly you were growing or how quickly and profitable, in general, the success of your business. There was almost no correlation between ROAS and how well you were doing. So yeah, something really important to think about. And then finally, I think we've hit peak Amazon. Again, I'm going to call it this year. We'll see how that, if that, I think we probably need at least a couple of years to establish a trend. So next year, see if that happens as well. But I think we've hit peak Amazon. I think there's still, of course, if you listen to the podcast for a while, you tend to know I tend to be not a huge Amazon fan from the merchant side. I don't think it's probably the best place to start your brand today. I think there's, if you're a brand that has built off of Amazon, and especially there's one company that I advise invested in that was thinking about going on Amazon. Initially, I said, no, you know, don't do it. I don't think necessarily your product is wildly, branded. Focus on the stuff that you have on your own site right now because it's going really well. But then open it up to a group of entrepreneurs and the other investors that were much smarter than I am, especially on the Amazon front, and said, hey, should they reconsider this? This is the advice I'd given them. And they immediately went to Amazon, typed in their product name, and people were not only just searching for their product, but were searching for their product with their brand name associated with it. So there was all of this demand that was already existing there, people looking for the brand on Amazon, and it wasn't being fulfilled. So in some cases like that, I think it makes a lot of sense to go capture that demand if people are searching for it. But starting from scratch today, especially with some of the numbers I mentioned earlier in terms of the growth trends and profitability trends, yeah, I wouldn't want it to be the core part of my business. But again, that's just me. We should have an Amazon fight to the, battle to the death. Maybe not to the death. Maybe that's a little bit dramatic. But at least a good spirited debate about folks in 2022. I think that'd be a lot of fun. We'll have to get that on the record. So anyway, those are the four major takeaways and all the details. You can find the full report at ecommercefuel.com/e-commerce-trends. Thank you again to everyone who took the time to fill this out. Hoping to do actually a printed copy of this as well in partnership with Postpilot here in the coming weeks and get those mailed out to folks. So it's always a lot of fun doing this. And also a huge congratulations to Tony Spencer from notsleepy.com. He is the winner of the round trip ticket anywhere in the world post-COVID adventure. If you have followed the study, you know that every year we give away a round trip ticket to one lucky participant. And coming as the world's opening back up, comes at a pretty good time to explore the planet. So Tony, thank you so much. And yeah, excited to hear where you go. And then finally, one last reminder, I mentioned at the very, very top, but in case you missed that for some reason, loads of cool events coming up on the horizon. Our Charlotte ECF event is coming up September 21st and 22nd in, shockingly, Charlotte, North Carolina. Tickets are on sale now at ecommercefuel.com/Charlotte. This is open to e-commerce fuel members. The vast majority of people there will be e-commerce fuel members, 7- and 8-figure brand owners. But we also have a handful of guest passes available, and you can learn how to get one of those and apply for one at ecommercefuel.com/Charlotte. Also, Ecom Camp is our event exclusively for ECF members that run 8-figure businesses November 1st through the 4th. If you're in the community, you have an 8-figure business, yeah, join us. It's going to be a really good time in Palm Springs, 2 days at a very cool location. We're taking over this private resort, going to do some fun, very cool activities, and you should be able to get all the details in the community at the events tab or in the 8-figure group area. Again, tickets for both of these events go up in the next week or so by July 14th. So make sure to grab those now. And then finally, if you're in the community, ECF Live, save the date, March 6th through the 9th in San Diego, California. So yeah, put it on the calendar. Make sure you don't have any trips. Cancel them if you do. We'd love to see you there. The fact that you've stuck around through that much e-commerce nerding out and geekery tells me you just might be a good fit for the e-commerce fuel community. It's the largest group of 7- and 8-figure store owners on the planet, and it's a packed, active discussion board, multiple live events throughout the year, and so much more. So if that kind of sounds interesting, you should check it out, learn more, and consider applying for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Also, big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your average order value by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also A2X, saving you hours of wasted time and frustration by making e-commerce reconciliation easy. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/A2X. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
The ASY Radio Network, live from New York.